Hello there. So I'm Gareth Anstey. I'm from Team Ablaze, who has been on Robot Wars, also have applied to BattleBots previously, and also This Is Fighting Robots in China. So I've competed all around the world doing what we call robot combat, which is the sport which was born from Robot Wars. Many of you will probably recognize the images of the robots that are on screen. So these are the original house robots. This has pretty much been my life in terms of when I was a young kid. You know, I'm sure we can all appreciate the idea of being bullied, and then you want that kind of release when you go home. For me, when I went home, Robot Wars was that release for me. In my teenage years, as I grew up, I then realized that it's something that I could get into, and it's something that I then went on to dedicate my life effectively to doing. I changed my aspirations to be doing engineering, to then do a university degree. After that, I actually done a scholarship and started a PhD. I started looking into firefighting robots at the time because Grenfell was a big thing. However, unfortunately, then the COVID pandemic happened and I couldn't progress with that. The talk I want to do to you today is about whether Robot Wars has a meta. I'll come on to why that is important in a minute. But effectively, when I started doing a PhD again post-pandemic, I wanted to do the thing that I really had passion about, the thing that I wanted to do more than anything else. I realised how hard doing a doctorate is and that you really need to have everything that you want in your heart and soul to do it. Part of what I hope to achieve with doing my doctorate effectively is establishing a new field of research, because robot combat is one of those things that I'm sure a lot of people recognize what it is. A lot of people recognize the robots that are on screen right now, but there's actually very few books on the subject. There's very few research papers, and I'm hoping to be able to justify a use within STEM, within education, because I'm standing here today because robot combat inspired me to go into STEM. And I'm hoping that effectively within the next few years we can start inspiring new generations of students to go into STEM through a similar kind of way. The first thing I should probably... Thank you. The first thing I should probably do is actually introduce what Robot Wars is to people who have just come here because it's quite a hot day and they want to be in the shade. So what I'll do is I have a video here which I've downloaded. So unfortunately it is standard definition and I don't know how well it's going to display on here. But it's a great YouTube video, I think, that displays what Robot Wars is in about a minute. So I'll play that quickly and just let you have a look. So what Robot Wars is, or robot combat as we call it officially the sport, is mechanized mayhem. I like to joke that by the end of my PhD I'd like to claim to have the qualification of having a master's in mayhem. I don't think that's going to fly academically, but I'll try. It's probably worth saying I have a BSc and say it's a bond swimmer certificate, which is a reference I hope most of you will get. But effectively, what is important about a meta? So to define a meta to everyone, for me, a meta is the most effective tactic available. Now, a lot of people will say that's a backronym. It comes from other descriptions. But I think that's the best way of describing what it is in practice. So whether Robot Wars has a meta or not, The reason that can be important is that if RobotWars is a solved problem in terms of there is a meta and that everyone should just go for that one design and to copy it from here on to be successful, it becomes a solved game. Computers can solve chess to a certain degree nowadays, but also noughts and crosses, there are ways you can play that game that means you can never lose. In theory, if RobotWars does have a meta, that means that students or people who want to learn engineering by looking into RobotWars can just look up that solution and be 50, 60% of the way there, just like simply by picking that solution up. If RobotWars does not have a meta and means that there is no most effective tactic to choose, then what makes you win? Is it the driver, for example, the person operating the robot? Well, if the robot's not good enough, it's never going to be able to get to the championship finals, no matter how good the driver is. So what the argument I would like to make by the end of my PhD is effectively that a robot that is meta at the time can go so far, but it will not be able to win. It's about your understanding of engineering, your understanding of engineering solutions, how they relate to each other in terms of material choices, electronics, and integrating that into a single project, which then becomes how you become successful within robot combat. If that is the case, then effectively, no matter how much time, resources, and education we pour into it, it becomes a very low barrier to entry that anyone can enter, but that no matter how much we research, we will never come to a final solution. I'm sure if I was to talk to you about engineering projects and I said, let's build a bridge, what kind of shape should we use up for our bridge? Most people would have played enough games along that idea of it's just triangles, yeah? With robot combat, if everything is possible, it's about your understanding of those solutions and about trying to iterate on your design and making sure that you have a genuine concept of engineering and how it comes together to be successful. So what I have here is two sort of meta robots in regard, and that these robots were very highly successful at the time, but the question then becomes whether it's their design that makes them successful, or is it the understanding, the engineering principles, and the operation behind these robots that is what made them successful. Does anyone recognize these two robots? Yeah? So we've got Razor and Hypnodisc. Part of what I've done in my degree is I looked into a sort of rock-paper-scissors relationship between designs, where there's certain designs that will always beat one but will lose to another, and that becomes cyclic. Effectively, what that means is that there is no true ultimate design because there's always someone who can beat you. What I wanted to do, because we're going to have a look at a fight and we'll look at it casually first. We'll then go through and analyze it a bit. But I'm going to look at the third robot to this pairing, because I always say that Hypnodisc could beat Razor. We know that Razor is very fragile and Hypnodisc got a flywheel. It's a fight that never happened, but that's something that I believe to be true. The robot in between them that we're going to have a look is Bigger Brother. Bigger Brother lost to Razor, and we're going to watch a fight of it against Hypnodisc, where we're going to see whether or not it should have beaten Hypnodisc in a fight or not. So I'll bring that up and we'll have a look through. I also, this is a good excuse just to watch Robot Wars as well. Oh, should be sound on that.
Whack!
Sound like
Hypnodisc gains momentum. I'll tell you what, Bigger Brother withstood that attack very nicely, thank you. And very nearly got in underneath Hypnodisc. Hypnodisc with a 20mm ground clearance that could be vulnerable to that lifting device that gives Bigger Brother so much more potency in this series. Will the gas last out, and how much damage can they take from Hypnodisc? I think there's a gash in the side of Bigger Brother. There it is, on the left-hand side. We've just got a glimpse of it. And the Rose family and Hypnodisc immediately on top there. And they come in with another onslaught. You have to be so strong to withstand this spinning, devilish Hypnodisc weapon, and I don't think Bigger Brother are, and something flew off there. It's crumpled, it's ruffled, Bigger Brother. And Ian Watts and little Joe 8.5 and little Ellie 6 have done brilliantly to get this far. They've enjoyed it, and we've enjoyed having them in the Robot War series once again. Oh, Bigger Brother, oh, tattered and torn, I don't like to watch. And crumpled and well-worn by now. And Hypnodisc relentless in its pursuit of its quarry. And I'm afraid that Bigger Brother flipper is not going to work here, because Dave Rose is too quick. Oh, even little Ellie can't watch. Can we?
Do we want to see more damage inflicted to Bigger Brother? Yes, we do! Hypnodisc with the blade spinning away. Looks like here, battling its way through in worthy style. Bigger Brother, was it dragged, was it pushing? Through Tip-Top, out. Through Splinter, out. Didn't quite close. Three Stegs, out. Beat S3, beat Chaos 2, and the run ends here. Or does it, Ellie? Come on, watch again, because Hypnodisc is in the corner, in the CPZ. And we'll need to get out, and something flew out of Bigger Brother there. Some sort of mesh, I think it was. Will Ellie be looking now? Hypnodisc seemed to be a bit more wary. And I'll tell you what, despite all the damage, Bigger Brother are still fighting on. I wouldn't have minded a Bigger Brother like this. And they've got enough confidence to go for the pit release button, have they? Are they going to nudge Hypnodisc onto the pit release? What a fight back. Oh, Hypnodisc is on the verge of going down. What an upset. Bigger Brother are beating Hypnodisc. Ellie, look again. Hypnodisc are out. You've done it. You've won it.
So, thing I'm going to ask you all quickly, just before we'll go through it again and we'll watch it a bit slower to try and understand what's happening from a Roboteer's perspective. Bigger Brother and Hypnodisc. Now, until the pit was open, who thinks that Hypnodisc was winning? Yeah? Everyone thinks Hypnodisc is winning, yeah? Did anyone think that Bigger Brother had a chance until it opened the pit? Was the pit what won it? Yeah? So, I can tell you now that Bigger Brother was actually on top of that fight for much earlier than many of you will realise. And this is going to come into that sort of rock, paper, scissors type situation. And they're actually strategising this from the very start. Thing I want you to notice as we start this fight quickly here, it will be muted. I'm hoping you can all see this. Do you see Bigger Brother's facing backwards? Yeah? So if it's weapons on the front, why is it facing backwards? Does anyone want to try and have a guess why they think? Yeah? Going to spin around, so maybe they wanted to take the first hit, make Hypnodisc stop spinning, and then hit it. The reason is because that's where it's the most well armoured. All the armour at the front is quite thin to allow it to get the weapon system in, and at the back it's just a solid brick. What it's trying to do is get Hypnodisc to hit it as much as possible. In this fight, we think of Bigger Brother as being a flipper. Really, what Bigger Brother is trying to be in this fight is a Rambot. A Rambot is something a bit like this. I have at the front of the table, and I'll refer to it a bit later on. But these are the robots that counter spinners incredibly well. And it is a type of a design that you can integrate into other designs and sort of become a sort of like papery rock, where you're moving yourself in that rock, paper, scissors. And it's becoming a bit of a, rather than just binary, it's becoming a bit more of a spectrum, where you're positioning yourself within that to have certain advantages against some designs and certain advantages against others. And you can be modular about this as well. So as we start the fight, obviously, Bigger Brother is taking a lot of damage here, but you'll notice it's constantly reversing into Hypnodisc. Hypnodisc takes a lot of energy. Like, batteries weren't as good at this time as what they are nowadays. And so with every hit Hypnodisc is given to Bigger Brother, it's also having to absorb those hits. It's turning round when it's slowing down just to try and get some flips in. But you can see it's not going forward into Hypnodisc there. It's turning round. It realises it's up to speed and it's going to back into it to try and take those hits and try and wear Hypnodisc down. I'll let it play out just so I'm not skipping through the fight, because that's probably that'll get annoying. But you can see little taps here. Once we start getting into the CPZ, we saw the house robot interfere with the fight at that point. That's actually where Bigger Brother starts to come out on top. It's going to be taking a lot of damage in the meantime, so you can see they're starting to lose the weapon system right now. It is definitely behind in this fight. If the judges were to stop it right now, Hypnodisc would definitely be winning. But the thing is, this is a whole fight we need to consider. It is a whole 5 minutes at the time that they are working out a strategy over those times to try and wear Hypnodisc down. I said, I'll let it just play out. I don't want to keep talking. So it's trying to get its weapon into play there, but only when it's already taken a hit from Hypnodisc. You can see just how strong that chassis is. Mechanically, Bigger Brother is still working perfectly fine here. It's still moving at the same speed. It has a bit of a limp to it. You can see it's dragging on the left side a little bit there. But overall, it's still perfectly functional. Well, apart from that flipper. Now we're going to get into the CPZs. What I want you to look at is actually how quick hip the disc is to get away here. So you can see it's moving about slowly a bit there. But once it gets some pace, watch the disc, see if it spins up, and see how quickly hip the disc drives away. We saw early on in the fight it was driving relatively quickly. So you can see it's spinning up fine there. But it's not able to drive anymore. It can't drive and spin at the same time. Do you see how it's just not getting away? It's not getting space. Bigger Brother is all over it right now and keeping it in that CPZ. At this point, the fight is actually somewhat even in terms of who has the most potential. See how it stops spinning now? It's struggling to drive. It's struggling to spin. And it doesn't spin for the rest of this fight. You can see Bigger Brother's gone for the pit release. They realise what's happening. And still, hit the disc is not spinning. It's struggling to move. It's struggling to operate. And that's when it went down the pit. That's the sort of thing that is the difference between how we look at it from someone who does this all the time and looking at it in a more casual perspective. Now, the question is, can we teach that? Teach the idea of people to come and approach an engineering problem and look at what's going well, what needs improving, this sort of how do we optimize our designs? These kinds of engineering principles are not very hard facts in that it could be other reasons, but we can hopefully see that there is things that could be better about hitting the disc in terms of its resilience to its fighting, but also things that Bigger Brother has done well to integrate into its design to allow it to keep going from an engineering perspective. So what I'll do then is I'll break it down into three categories: class, style, and type. I have made these up effectively to try and simplify it. But class, there's five different classes, and we'll go through the classes. But we have rotational weaponry, like hit the disc, which I'll show you here. This is one class of weapon, and you can cut that down into various styles of weaponry as well. You have vertical spinners, you have horizontal spinners, things like blades as well, but then also different types of that. So hip the disc there is a horizontal flywheel. We could also have a horizontal bar. Does anyone recognize a robot called carbide? Yeah? So carbide has a bar. That means that the bar is much longer. That means that it gets better engagement and potentially engages from further away without having to get close to the chassis. But it's also lighter. So potentially it won't have the same MOI. It won't be able to keep spinning after every hit. It could engage significantly more, but there are downsides to that in terms of the form factor and how we fit that in the design. Even looking at something as just as simple as being able to choose which of these options on the table are optimized for our design. This is engineering, and this is something that students can hopefully engage with because it is a relatively simple thing. But no matter what choice you choose, they can be successful. And that's why, as we come on towards the end, I'll show you the study I've done throughout all of Robot Wars to show you literally anything can be successful if you know about the optimization well enough. Just to go through the other classes, anyone recognize this? Yeah, it does have it written on the front. So that's the hard thing about this. Chaos 2 is lifting weaponry, so that is the class. Lifting weaponry, you get rear hinge, so that's Chaos 2 has a rear hinge, that is a hinge at the back, means you flip up. Front hinge means you're pushing forwards. You also have things like actuators. So if anyone remembers a robot called Panic Attack, for example, has lifting forks, that's an actuator. Also rotary. There's no real good examples of that to give unless you know BattleBots and a robot called Mammoth on that. Razor, as we talked about before, he has grabbing weaponry. So you have piercers, which are like a crusher on that. Also just grabbing. The differences between them is a crusher will want to actually damage an opponent, go into the opponent and destroy. That needs a lot of engineering. It needs a lot of maybe hydraulics at heavyweight scale and so on. Whereas a clamp just holds onto an opponent and then hopes to do something with them. So these kind of like little nuances in design. So we can look at what components are available to us, what are within our budget, and then optimize what we want the robot to be able to do within that singular design. I have made up a word called cyclic weaponry. That's purely because there's a lot of different weapons and we don't have a word to bring them all together. What I mean by that is basically weaponry that goes backwards and forwards. So axes, for example, swing backwards and forwards. We also have reciprocating weapons, so spikes. You can imagine a spike at the front of a robot just coming out, going back in and jabbing at its opponent. Also a new type of one called hammer saws or articulated saws go into the sort of cyclic weaponry as well. And last one to cover, this is the last class, is static weaponry. So Tornado, Series 6 champion, these are quite effective. Effectively, this is no weapon. Does anyone know what the advantage to having no weapon is? More armor, yeah? More powerful drive as well. Things like that. You can basically just optimize on what you've got left, yeah? Static weaponry sometimes is not allowed within some competitions, but it is part of this dynamic where I'm saying it's the rock, paper, scissors, and you effectively get a sort of pyramid. I don't know if you've ever seen, like, shooter games. You sometimes have these little pyramid pentagon type things, and they have little heat charts on how good everything is. It's kind of like you want to optimize towards one, but optimizing towards one will de-optimize you against another. These are the kind of robots that are really good against rotational weaponry, and this is the robot that Bigger Brother was trying to be, effectively. It was trying to be a static wedge, a rambot, using its great armor and trying to take the hits as much as possible. So you can replicate other styles of fighting, even within a design that looks like it should be a flipper. After all, if you have a flipper and it doesn't work, you are a static weaponry. It's all you've got left. Static weaponry is effectively what we have left when we basically lose our weapons. So this is the analysis I've done. This is part of my first paper, so I'm looking into whether Robot Wars has a meta, and I'm going to go on to whether the sport as a whole, in terms of robot combat, has a meta. The reason I started with Robot Wars is just purely because it's the one everyone knows, and it's the reason probably half of you are here, because there's the word Robot Wars on the thing. These are all of the plot points for Robot Wars, in terms of every class, style, and type. And the thing to notice is that if Robot Wars had a meta, there'd probably be something off to the top right. Yeah, in terms of there should be something really successful that no matter how many people build them, they still remain successful. What we see in actuality is that generally as robots become more prevalent in terms of more people are building them, you have some really good ones. You also have ones I can't say as to how good they are, but there's ones that are just simply are ineffective, and they balance each other out, because whilst there are some robots that really understand their design, like Razor, there are people who copy that and don't understand the design. They don't understand it to the same level, and they can't get the same level of optimization from it. As such, from the data I have, whilst I cannot conclude that Robot Wars definitely doesn't have a meta, I can at the very least conclude that there is no evidence that it does have a meta. The main part of what I found, actually, looking through all the different classes and all the different styles, is that we have periods where metas come in and metas go out. People react to what the metas are. So in terms of Razor, was extremely successful in Series 5, extremely successful in Series 6. But people started to counter that. People started to react to it. And by the time we got to Series 6 and 7, the robots that are doing well were the static weapons. Nowadays, the robots that tend to do well are the spinners, but we may come around to a time again where the crushers start doing well again. And things like this come in ebbs and flows, people reacting to what's currently out there, looking at it, and finding a solution to the problem. Finding the solution to a problem, I think, is the definition of an engineering. And it's about teaching that in an engaging way that anyone can say, I'd really like to do that, because ultimately, destroying stuff is cool, yeah? So hopefully people can approach this, approach the sport as a serious sport, and say, I'm going to learn about this, I'm going to learn about the principles behind this, and optimize myself to be significantly better than what I came in from this. That's something that I feel I've got from this, is that I now talk about engineering, I do with students and so on. And in the first year of students, teaching them about robots, the thing that they learn is that it just needs to work. The robots that do really well with my students are just the ones that can drive and keep driving for 2 minutes. It's as simple as that in the first year. In the second year, the ones that do really well are just the ones that are really well-rounded. They're not special in any particular way. They're not going to set the world alight because they're best drive or best whatever, but they've really integrated every part of that design into one coherent strategy. I'm not onto the third year yet, but I'm hoping in the third year my students will take that and actually start building things that can go to competitions nationally and start winning fights around against professional roboteers. Because it's just taking those iterations, putting iterations, and progressing our knowledge in engineering. That's why I hope Robot Wars doesn't have a meta, because it means that no matter how much time we do this for, we're always going to be finding new things and engaging new generations of engineers. And hopefully then anyone can pick it up, because it is low barrier to entry, but high reward in terms of what I think you can get from it. And ultimately, It's fun. You know, think something that you can do, anyone can pick up with a 3D printer nowadays, a few little servo motors, you can make 150 gram ant weights that fit in your hand, go to competitions and compete with them. There are competitions around the UK every 2 weeks, effectively. This is a scale called hobby weight. If anyone wants to see any heavy weights that they would have seen on the show, I do have one in my truck outside. You can have a look at the big 110 kilos one. Also, if anyone is badly parked, it is a flipper. We can deal with that, but just to let, if anyone has a spare fire extinguisher to power it with, we can try that out. But it can flip 2 tons. That's the amount of power within that system. I would not recommend anyone starts with that, but I'm saying that there is a progression where even if you feel like you've come to the end of a natural progression cycle within what you're building, you can move on, and there's just infinite possibilities within a single sport that I hope is highly engaging and also highly fruitious in terms of what it can provide to students and to children and people who want to learn engineering from base principles, doing stuff with their hands, not with their theory. Thank you.